You are listening to the YOPN podcast. Here's a message about our founder on a grill.
Anna Grill was a 38-year-old, healthy, active wife and mom of two daughters, ages 9 and 7. She was busy climbing the corporate ladder, president of the PTA at her daughter's school, and living the life she'd always wanted. But then friends and family began noticing a change.
I had this slight tremor in my left pinky that directed me to go to my doctor, and before I knew it, like 3 months later, I was diagnosed with Parkinson's, and I just didn't even know what to think. I mean, I was blown away.
As the youngest and only female on her leadership team at work, Anna decided to keep her diagnosis a secret, worried that her colleagues would begin to see her more for her disability than her abilities.
When you start that isolation of not telling and having that secret, it's very hard to break because there's never a good time to tell people about it. So I think those of us, especially those of us that don't want to be pitied or provided sympathy, we tend to hide it. And I hid it for probably 10 years.
When her symptoms began to impact her efforts to lead her team at work, Anna chose to reveal her diagnosis to family and friends. As she began seeking resources to help her find a way forward, she soon realized no such resources existed for the young onset population. Out of her own need, Young Onset Parkinson's Network was born.
I decided to start the Young Onset Parkinson's Network, and we're now in 48 states and 17 international countries, which is unbelievable in a very short period of time, but it goes to show you the need that was there for coming together of people of like age and issues. And we have a lot more to do, so it's been very exciting and fulfilling.
Despite the challenges of living with young onset Parkinson's, Anna continues to advocate for others with the disease, growing a supportive community that helps them live well and thrive beyond diagnosis.
Today's guest is an actor, writer, director, and teacher, Matthew Moore. He wrote a play called What I Didn't Say, A Journey Through Parkinson's. It brings to light the tough, real concerns and feelings about Parkinson's that are often quietly kept inside. Sit back and enjoy the interview with Matthew Moore. We'll be back with Matthew in 30 seconds.
I've been an artist and educator. I've always worked as a professor. I've taught at small business colleges and at Moody Bible Institute, actually. So I've always taught theater and public speaking, which has been a fun combination. I've been the coach of speech teams and debate teams, and I've always had this passion for acting. And so I needed a terminal degree to continue on teaching, so I went and got a Master of Fine Arts in Classical Acting at the George Washington University. It's a fun way to make a little money. It's a hard way to earn a living if you're going to be an actor, especially in Columbus, Ohio. So even with the combination of like voiceover work and camera acting and stage acting, it's a hard ball to push up the hill. So it's always been sort of an avocational approach for myself. Shakespeare in the Park, that's my jam. There's nothing better. And so I've had a lot of that. But of course, here comes my tremor in about 2018, I would say. It was a Buckeye football game. So I'm watching Ohio State University. I live in Columbus, you know, so Buckeye football is pretty intense. And my tremor kicked up and did that for about a year, saw a doctor, was finally diagnosed with Parkinson's. And so, like everybody else, it's this delay of the disease, kind of like how much can I put off? But if you're a speaker and an actor, it's a little bit of a double curse, honestly. because there's only so many Shakespearean characters with a tremor. Yeah. And so, I mean, even now, right at this moment, there's an audition for Tevye, Fiddler on the Roof. I've played Tevye before. It's a fantastic role. But my tremor is such that it has to really take a
look.
Yeah.
That's the role. I'm not singing in a right key, but you know.
So anyways, I've always encouraged my students to create their own work. Like, why do you have to be prisoner to the audition system? And so I took a little of my own advice. I'm like, man, I'm going to create a work that doesn't matter what my symptoms are. I can just keep on doing what I love to do. And so I interviewed people because I'm not a playwright. I'm an actor.
How many people did you interview?
12. So I interviewed people with PD and care partners and a couple of neurologists. And I'm telling you, with their permission, of course, I just used some of that transcript right into the play. I'm like, this is better than anything I can write.
So, what really hit me was in my office when she looked at him and said, you're not the same person you were.
Yeah, that's a hard one to swallow.
Yeah, there's a lot of loss and grief that is, we don't know what to do with it. You're giving us a place to feel seen, heard, understood, and less alone.
Personally, I think you could save marriages with this because you don't know what's going on in the head of your partner. Yeah. This will bring it out what's going on in your head.
I think that's the power of the interviews, you know, that because it's interview-based, coming from real people with real situations, it has a reality to it that just kind of smacks you up on the side of the head a little bit. Yeah, but anyways, I compiled all these stories together, and I'll be honest, the writing of it came pretty fast. Like, it just, I don't know, one thing led to another, and we workshopped it. I got some actors together and sat and read it and got feedback, like, what about more of this, less of that? Of course, putting some comical moments in it was very important to me. If you're asking people to come see a play about Parkinson's, that's kind of a stretch yeah. for most people.
You got to send in the clowns at some point, right? Like, but was it really about Parkinson's, or was it about the relationship that people have with illness and relationships people have, period?
Yeah, it's you're right on. It could apply to any neurodegenerative disease or terminal disease, or, you know, just general life. The title of it was the easiest thing for me to write because that describes me. I'm just not very forthcoming. I don't tell people my emotions, which is a little odd for an actor maybe, but.
You know what I'm saying? You seem kind of, you seem a little shy to me.
What's that?
He seems a little bit shy.
Well, I'm an introvert.
Makes sense to me. Easier to play someone else than talk about yourself.
Yeah, that's right. No, right. That's true. I'm a situational extrovert. So when called upon, I can do it when I need to. I happen to think that introverts make excellent actors. Sometimes they're more observant, generalizations here, but being in the moment without having to take over the moment like some extroverts do.
Right. I do both so I can hear what you're saying very clearly.
Yeah.
And acting, you got into acting because you wanted to be on all sides of this.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, the whole Chariots of Fire thing, people running with your hair waving back, da 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 da, yeah, ba da ba ba ba. That whole thing of what makes you feel alive, that's what acting is for me, you know, especially Shakespeare. If I can make 400-year-old words leap off a page and make someone laugh with the whole idea of like being in the moment, remembering my lines, remembering where to go, what to say, outdoors with geese flying overhead and dogs barking. And, you know, if I can make that happen, that's just this pinnacle of like energy and excitement and happiness for me. putting all that together. So that's why in the end, I wrote the play so I didn't have to give all that up. Plus the benefit of like informing the general public about the fastest growing brain disorder in the world that no one has a clue about.
Clearly.
Mm-hmm. Person, you know, other than Michael J. Fox, what do people know about Parkinson's?
Well, all my pop culture references are lost.
All your what are lost?
Pop culture references. I said, moving on up like Jefferson in the elevator the other day, and a bunch of kids just went. And then I said, we should MacGyver it because the elevator kept getting stuck. Does anybody have chewing gum? And they all went.
No, it's true.
But speaking of old, about all the terminology in Shakespearean language, to abhor, I abhor you instead of you suck.
Oh, yeah. There's some beautiful.
Aghast. You know, everything's so heavy.
Well, and actors have to know what those words mean. It's a. Mm-hmm. You can't just say things that you don't know what they mean. And so I've spent many hours poring over a dictionary, learning the specific meaning of a word so that I know what it means and how to use it and how to react to it if someone else is saying it. But
any Shakespearean insults you could share with us?
The insults.
I love it.
Oh, man. Nothing's coming off the top
of my head. Away, thou rag.
I love it when they call on the stars, oh, Jupiter, oh, Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Those are real things back in that day. They were real and had power and could change the direction of your life. So they're not throwaway lines. They're
right.
Real pleading to an entity.
So Matthew, how long ago were you diagnosed? What age were you?
I was 49. It's 2019. I had, by that point, an MRI. What else is there? The MRI, name's escaping me. So I had about four or five tests, including a neuropsychological exam, as you know. Should I tell that? I'll tell the story. I won't tell the story, but I had a neuropsychological exam, and it was terrible. It was grueling, 3 hours long. And it was very emotional for me. I pretty much cried my way through that stupid thing. But at one point, they said, all right, we want you to name as many words as you can that start with the same letter in 1 minute. And she said, let's use the letter F. And so, so obviously an F word came to mind, which I didn't say. I had remembered a story that I had learned when I was in my 20s called A Parable in F. It's a story about the prodigal son using almost entirely words that start with F, about 200 of them. So I got this idea. I'm like, hey, I'll just tell this story one word at a time and not make it sound like a story. I have all these F words. And so I thought, no, you know, you better tell the lady, switch the letters. And then I thought, heck no, I'm doing it. So I just launched into this story and she's furiously writing down F words. Like we get to the end of a minute and she's like, man, you know a lot of F words. And I said, fortunately, yes.
I would have said aphasia. Oh, wait, that's an A. What's that word for? Yeah.
Yes, right.
There's so many reasons why I think that's awesome.
So it was one funny moment in the midst of all that. Anyways, had all these tests and Parkinson's was the winner as far as a diagnosis.
Not bad if you're looking at ALS or something else.
Lewy bodies.
Yeah.
So Matthew, how do you handle the diagnosis and how'd your loved ones handle it? Tell them right away.
Well, like most people, by that time, I, you know, had an inkling that I probably had it, Parkinson's, and the doctor had sort of a sideways way of saying it. I actually had to clarify. I looked him in the eye and say, are you saying that I have Parkinson's? And he said, yes. That's a hard moment. It's even harder when you're back in the car, in the parking lot. So,
were you alone?
No, my wife was with me.
Mm-hmm.
We both just wept for a bit and, you know, tried to decide who to tell and when and what to do next. And unfortunately, I was in Chicago at the time. And this is one of the reasons I wrote the play, is that I had a very bad, I'll say, relationship with my neurologist, and just had a very difficult time from the point of diagnosis getting launched and started and on something, because he wasn't a movement specialist. I didn't know. I didn't know I needed a movement specialist.
Big difference.
So yeah, there is a big difference. At one point in one of my meetings with him after the diagnosis, he literally said, "The brain's a mystery," shrugged his shoulders and walked out.
Thanks.
You know, yeah, thanks for that. Now I'm here in Columbus, Ohio, and so I have a lot better care. I have a movement specialist, and I'm, for the most part, I think, getting what I need. But back to your question, I was never really quite in denial. I could tell my body, you know, like something's going on. And so when they said what it was a little bit of a relief in a way, like, okay, well, now we have a target and we know what it is. So I was surprised at it being sort of a relief, but that is a little bit of how I felt.
Having a known entity to work with is everything in a world where we pathologize invisible illnesses.
Yeah. But it's not easy learning about it. You pick up a book, if you're just Googling Parkinson's, man, it's a madhouse. You come across the five stages and you just about pass out.
The shaky old guy illustration, we're trying to get rid of that.
Yeah.
They came from each other most of all. So did you enter some support groups at that point?
You know, it took me quite a while to go to a support group. I got connected with exercise right away. A PD exercise class. So that was really helpful. However, and I say this in the play, when you hang out with parkies that are worse off than you are, it can be a hard moment, you know.
Yes, it can. I went through the same thing myself.
Yeah.
A lot of people talk about that. Brian Grant has mentioned that. Some people who work with Davis Finney have mentioned that. I hear that in every group. And yet the wisdom of the elders also can come through, which I enjoy.
Well, and to see their determination, and the phrase I use in the play at that moment is, I'm looking at the future me. So that's,
you're not though, you're not.
Right, maybe not.
All different.
Yeah.
It's been 17 years, man. It's been like 15 years now, right, Heather?
Right, and Mike is still, got it going. Keep in mind that when we're diagnosed later, and it's not YOPD, it's a very different disease. People don't seem to know that, even in the medical community. They're like, oh yeah, I know all about Parkinson's. My grandpa had it. And I'm like, no, it's not the same thing.
No.
They're just trying to.
Yeah, nobody knows particularly the internal symptoms, you know, the emotions and the pseudo bulbar effect, and
right, they ask us for anxiety.
I learned all about the pseudo bulbar effect. I love when you put that up in the play.
What was that?
I didn't think anybody else had pseudo bulbar effect but me.
Can you?
I've got a quick funny story about that. I was asked to be on a guest panel at a neurology conference along with an ALS person and a stroke victim, and so I'm the Parkinson's guy. And he asked me a question. I had noticed that at this convention, there was a pseudo bulbar booth. So this individual booth was just selling medication. So the guy started the interview and asked me a question, and I just started crying a little bit. And I stopped and said, are the pseudo bulbar people out there? I might need some medication. And about seven people laughed really hard. And the rest are like, what's he talking about? Yeah, the internal symptoms, man, they're hard to overcome.
It's like crying in public. People will look at you like you get something wrong with you. There is something wrong with that, but they'll look at you, give you a look like, what's wrong, buddy? Why are you crying?
Yeah.
How right. About the people who don't show emotion, the replicants, the zombies, the people who are completely removed from all emotion? I'd rather be the one crying at the wedding and laughing at the funeral and being inappropriate or whatever, having yeah. feeling nothing, especially as an artist.
That is true.
The word outburst is different, though, you know.
Tourette's syndrome is a totally different animal. But to answer your question, yeah, I fill in the gap real fast. If I can tell people are looking at me and wondering what the heck's going on, if it's at all reasonable, I just tell my Parkinson's, because I don't want them filling in the vacuum of information, you know.
Like you're drunk, maybe, because in the ED, emergency department, I was treated like someone seeking pain meds. They mistook my symptoms of Parkinson's for DTs and other things.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, I should have been Shakespearean insults that day.
I had a guy come up to me and said, where were you deployed in the service? I said, I'm sorry, I love the military, but I was never a part. And he goes, really? My brother shakes just like that. He's got PTSD. And I said, I have Parkinson's. You know, just clarifying the moment for people, because they don't know what to think.
And both things might be true, but at this time, it's just Parkinson's.
Yeah, right.
So you were diagnosed and you decided to write a play. How long into the diagnosis did you decide to write the play?
Pretty long. So it was 2019 to 2022 is when I finished the play. I did the old trick where I told a lot of people that I was going to write a play. I told so many people that I was going to write a play that I could not write a play.
Thinking I got there.
It's a pretty good ploy. And then I got serious about it and I set a date. You know, you got to put some stakes in the ground. And like, I applied for some grants, and the grants sort of motivated me to be done by a certain time and have this and that and the other. So I kicked it into high gear, and it's been quite a process.
Can you mention some of your influences in the theater and or film communities? I'm a huge fan
I'm thinking most of the influences came sort of from family, you know, more immediate. The main character, Paul, he says, I don't have Parkinson's, I have Snarkinson's.
Yeah.
You know, his way of dealing with everything is humor. And so trying to make a joke out of everything, that is my father-in-law, 100%. You know, if a serious moment can be broken up with some strange snarky comment, he's gonna deliver it. So yeah, so I definitely had influences. I can't think that any of them are famous, but certainly big parts of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I was influenced by the people I was interviewing.
Yeah,
so to hear their passion, and it's kind of funny because I didn't want a lot of profanity in the play, you know, if you're saying, but one of the guys I interviewed just nailed the F word, you know, like every fifth or sixth word out of his mouth, you know, F in this and F in that and F Parkinson's. And there was part of me like, I can't let any of this in. And then part of me like, I should let every bit of that in, because that's exactly how people feel. We performed the play without a lot of... profanity, but I maintained sort of that energy, you know, the hatred, the bitterness, the toughness. F this, I'm going to overcome this one way or another. So there's a determination behind it that I think sparked some of the dialogue and the attitudes.
Now, do you see the determination or the bitterness more? Which side did you see more from the people you interviewed?
I'll have to say determination. I think genuinely, you know, the people that I interviewed aren't at death's door. They're active people who are, you know, fighting and have the energy and wherewithal to push back. And so, and a lot of times I fed off the determination of the care partner, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
You know,
we did you are see not how gonna... you found them?
Well, in a couple of cases, I interviewed a husband and wife, right? So, and she would call herself the care partner. And so those were very interesting interviews to have them talking back and forth and correcting each other and like, that's not true and all the rest. I didn't interview a care partner who wasn't already strongly connected with a PD patient by marriage, I guess I should say. So mostly it was husbands and wives, and that was a very interesting dynamic. And then I interviewed them separately. I sent each out of the room and I said, what didn't you say?
Give me a scoop.
Give me the real scoop.
Like on the record or off the record?
They knew it was all on the record.
How did they handle it by themselves when their spouse wasn't with them?
They were more emotional. Yeah, they were more emotional. There was more tears in the interviews by themselves. Because they started talking about the other person, you know, and the other person's such an important part of their life that it was emotionally significant for them.
Plus, I think the partner tries to put a stoic look to them so that I gotta cry in front of their partner because they want to be strong for them.
Yeah, or even me, you know, to cry through an interview, you know, they don't want someone to feel bad on their behalf. It was a very interesting process. And like I say, sometimes I just took the transcript and folded it right into the play word for word. I'm like, this is a bit of gold.
Yeah, why remake reality? Truth is stranger than fiction anyway.
Yeah.
More insults are coming into my view. Out of my sight, thou dost infect my eyes. See, I can't even say the words right. You have to teach me. We'll do insults for people that say silly things to us about Parkinson's, okay?
Yeah, that's from Richard III.
Yes.
Infect my eyes. Oh, that little speech is full of good insults.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Talked about being bitter and people being determined. Which side of the fence did you fall on? I fell on the bitter side for a long time.
I find myself hopping back and forth over that fence sort of on a regular basis. And I'm not sure what the triggers are, but I had a pretty long stretch of bitterness too, Michael. I know what you're talking about. Right now I'm in this, everything that comes up, I'm in this, I'm only 53 thing, back to YOPD, like, this thing's happening and I'm saying, holy crap, I've got this thing and I'm only 53, you know, and this new thing develops and oh my goodness, I'm only 53. What's going to be happening when I'm 63, 73, mm-hmm. 83. And so that's a hard place to pull your mind out of.
The anxiety is just brutal when you think like that.
Yeah.
And it isn't because we don't know that no one gets out of here alive. It's more like, will I be a burden? Will I be functional? Will I have to make decisions?
What will I have given up? You know, like even now with this play, I mean, it's great to have an outlet where I can have some symptoms, but I'm not going to be able to do the play forever. Somebody asked me about, what do you think about the future? I'm like, I don't think about the future. Mm-hmm. That is not on my list.
Are you looking forward to writing more? What's the next play? We tend to write in our heads before we spill it on the page.
Oh, that's a great point. We do, yeah. I'm very interested in a new work that would be a hybrid of dance and theater. I think that the juxtaposition of what Parkinson's does to your body as far as contraction, right, smallness, rigidity, all of these things are the exact opposite of great dance, which is fluid and open and, you know, you're moving easily through space. Mm-hmm. And so I think a story about maybe a ballerina who develops Parkinson's, and then to have certain parts of the story told through dance would be a really cool thing. So that's on my mind at the moment. And I have a contact with a ballet company in Chicago, and they're kind of interested in the idea. So I don't know. We'll see where it goes.
Wow, that'd be neat. And inclusive. Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. Like we become a bit like we're going in reverse, almost like Benjamin Button, you know, we're getting less act, we're getting smaller.
Yeah.
We have less control.
Yep. You know, having studied in my MFA, a big part of the classes that I took was stage movement. Like, how do I get rid of what I do and walk and act like a totally different person? And so,
like Starman.
Yeah.
He's kind of new in his body and he's like.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's a good example.
Yeah.
So I walk by a mirror or I pass by a plate glass window and I'm looking at like, why am I, you know, it's grievous to me that I can't move and walk through space like I used to.
For our listeners, he's in space. So am I. So when can we do a play together, guys? Yeah, but I need attention.
Michael, you act every day.
I try to. I get it.
Right? We're all doing improv.
Yeah, that's right. We all take
on. Robert, who does improv for Parkinson's?
Robert's great.
Yeah, that's right. I met him. Yeah.
Yeah, he's fine.
Yeah. It's funny you bring that up because I want to reach out and create a 1-2 combo of like, hey, let's do some improv and then let's have a play.
Perfect. That'd be beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, Gifford would be all of that too. Remember meeting Larry? I introduced you to Larry Gifford.
Yep. There are lots of people with talents that go unnoticed until we get a disease like this and we get to use it in a brand new way and learn it again, totally different angle.
Yeah, that's right.
Exciting to me, actually. That part's exciting.
Yeah.
So, Matthew, how do you earn a living from this play? Can you earn a living or how do you make money from this?
Well, we have a fee for performing the play, but I'm such a softie that, like, you know, anybody that says it's too much, I'm like, well, I just want to come do the play and let people know about Parkinson's and, you know, but we have a fee and we try to work it out with, well, I don't know. We're approaching universities a lot. And to answer your question, I do not make enough money from the play to sustain myself.
I don't think so.
Here's a line from Shakespeare. I have a patroness, fortunately, who makes good money. I have a part-time job, 10 hours a week. But yeah, we have a fee and sometimes people can pay it and sometimes they can't. And so we get along as best we can.
See, I have a fundraiser going out with Trent and I right now. You want to talk about that a little bit? Fundraiser with Trent.
Yeah. So they're trying to create an event for people to come and, you know, instead of a band or something, they're going to have the play. And we enjoy being used in that way. Yeah, why not? I think it's something different. It's very unique, right? It's a unique experience. And different than what most people have experienced. So, yeah. So Trent and Maureen think that it's they're going to have a good crowd, and it'll stir up some really great dialogue.
Are you creating a play about ping pong, or are you just doing a play that you have in your repertoire already?
Yeah, we're just doing the play we have already. Yeah.
What is the play called?
Yeah, What I Didn't Say: A Journey Through Parkinson's. And I wrote it with neurologists in mind. Just like, if they don't know me, if they don't know what's going on in my life, what's going on in my life has a huge impact on my physical state, you know, mm-hmm. The mind-body connection. And if I don't offer information and they don't dig for any information, things are going to get missed.
Right. Amen. You wouldn't know what to ask.
Yeah. And I'm not saying it's the neurologist's job to be a mental health therapist, but, and they're working on such little time, you know, get you in and get you out, but.
It should be their job to check in with us in that way.
Well, at the very least, it should be a team's job,
That's correct.
But that doesn't happen either. You know, the mental health therapist is never really connecting with the neurologist, who is never really connecting with the physical therapist.
And they're more psychiatrists driven by other things. They're not really caring about the patient. The humanity's not there. There's no gentleness to that.
Yeah. You know, I recently joined Overeaters Anonymous. I offered that up to my, that was something that I told my neurologist. She's like, "Oh, really? Are you kidding me?
You're on agonists, right?
Yeah, we need to drop your Mirapex." Huh. And like, why? You know, so suddenly, but if I had never said that, you know, if I had never said that and she never dug for it, I'd be on a full dose of Mirapex. So it's examples like that where I feel some burden to share important information, but they're doing kind of a poor job at the moment of digging in to pertinent information, I think. So
since your diagnosis, you should connect with the therapist and dig to find one that really works for you.
Good luck finding one that understands Parkinson's and disability specifically.
That's true.
I mean, we end up teaching them.
Yeah. Mm.
Paying you to teach you about my situation, like that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's true.
And so now I do have PTSD from the medical gaslighting.
Yeah.
You know, and from the emergency room visits where they treat me like I'm seeking pain meds. Like, these are traumatizing experiences.
Yeah.
From the medical community where I went in my most vulnerable state asking for help.
Yeah.
So you have this too, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Well,
let's again, talk. Here we are.
Yeah. My wife and I believe very firmly in the mind-body connection, and that a lot of pain that I might experience it's psychosomatic. Mm. It comes from, you know, unexpressed rage. Mm. There's a great Venmo, there's a great documentary out called All the Rage by a doctor named John Sarno. And his whole idea was we repress emotion and our body reacts and brings us into pain. Yeah, what's that?
I don't know what you mean about rage.
Oh, that's a punching
bag. My third heavy bag. I've broken two of them.
Oh, nice.
And my hand.
Did you really break your hand? My shoulder. Oh, no.
Reconstruction, yes.
Oh, goodness.
So, yeah, rage. How do we turn anger into fuel? Instead of letting it sit, the body keeps the score kind of thing. Creatively. Your catharsis is writing it out, right?
It was very cathartic for me.
Brilliant.
Cathartic to perform it, I must say. Yeah, I should journal. I'm one of those things where typing isn't the greatest now, but I should use speech to text for a journal.
We know how that goes. Based on my text, other people who are like, what?
Yeah.
I don't know what we're trying to say. I asked somebody to go to China with me this morning. Didn't even mean to. Hey, you want to go to China? He's like, no. So you can write your place through voice to text?
Yeah, that's primarily how I do it, and then go back and clean it up. But right. Yeah, speech to text is how I do almost everything now.
Do you do the run through online sometimes on Zoom during the COVID? Like, how'd you do your run throughs? The initial, just testing it.
Yeah, we did that. We rehearsed via Zoom. Yeah. In fact, we did a reading of the play at the Parkinson's Congress, and the woman that I read with, we practiced on Zoom 3 or 4 times. And
in Barcelona?
In preparing for Barcelona, yeah. So Maria from Dance for PD in New York City. Uh-huh. Do you know Maria?
Yep.
Or David Leventhal?
They're great.
They are great, man. Yeah. That was one of the best sessions that I attended, was the Dance for PD.
Sorry, I missed it.
Yeah, it was great.
Hmm.
Very good.
Sorry I missed meeting you. I'd like to work with you. For anyone listening, this is something that anybody could probably get involved in if you want to. How would someone reach you to keep track of what you're doing? And
I have a website.
Give it to us.
lampandlightproductions.com, lampandlightproductions.com. Yeah, we have, it's hard to keep up with it, but I do list where we're going to be in upcoming performances.
I'm in there now. It's a beautiful site. Lamp and Light Productions, all one word there together, .com.
That'll do it for tonight, folks. Once again, that is lampandlightproductions.com. Check it out. His name is Matthew Moore. It's a great play, guaranteed to blow your mind. Have a great night, everybody. See you next week.
Are you feeling? You feeling that way too? Or am I just a fool?